And it's KVC Arts Now on KVCR, arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming, welcoming author Tracy Wise with the novel Madame Sorrell's Lodger. Tracy, thank you for joining me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me on your show.
Oh, absolutely. This is a fun book. I'm sure I'm going to be floating between Madame and Madam, but let's go into it with a couple of versions of the plot line, please. Now, the first version, pretty much what a person can read on Amazon or some other online retailer or the back of the book.
Well, the back of the book says, a tormented artist arrives in a village in southern France to begin painting again. He stands before a house with blue shutters, hoping the change of scenery and brilliant colors of the countryside will calm the buzzing in his mind. Madame Sorrell, a formidable widow, runs a respectable and orderly boarding house. She finds this artist puzzling. Weighed down with canvas, easel, and a sailcloth bag filled with brushes and paints, he hurries out in his shabby clothing each morning, leaving a trace of footprints on the dusty street. His presence stirs something in her, something held back for many years. And then it goes along from there.
Yeah. Then there's that dot, dot, dot. It's just,
yeah. Yes.
Okay, so now how about another version? And that is just give us something that you can't get out there elsewhere, some real tease or enticement that's going to just make people go right now to their favorite online retailer.
Well, this is a novel that is, it's inspired by the life of Vincent van Gogh, mm-hmm. but his name is never mentioned in it. He is only referred to as the artist, because it's not really about the real Vincent van Gogh. This is my own portrait. So it's a story of an artist who has been ill in Paris, and he decides to come to the south of France to recover his health and begin painting again. But the way he sees the world is not the way most people do. And so he begins to change the people around him in this small village I only call A.
Yeah,
and the thing is, they also start to change him. And for someone who's never really had a sense of home before or community, he finally thinks he may have found it.
Wow. Sounds great. Now, we just cut right to the chase, Van Gogh there. There's something that you said, though, that just struck me, in that we think about Van Gogh's style of painting.
Yes.
Yeah, let's just go to Starry Night. That's a great, great example. And there's all these swirls, and we get these swirls in the book as well. But that, I always took it as his representation of things. Okay, that's just how he put it out there. But when you just said the way he sees the world, I'm wondering if he really sees things like that. Does the artiste in this book, is that really how his vision works?
The artiste is trying to put on a canvas everything he sees, feels, touches, tastes, everything, the three-dimensional world, the energy that's out there in the world. And he's trying to put that on a flat surface. And that's quixotic, really, when it comes down to it. But that is what he's struggling to do. That is what he feels compelled to do. And he says that over and over to the people in the village of A.
This is really fascinating. And when I'm hearing these descriptions, these are really just fleshing out, emotions and just ideas surrounding each and every character that we encounter in here. The title is Madame Sorrell's Lodger, but at one point I was playing with the idea that it's really just as much about Madame Sorrell as it is him. He's a central character, but then I think I changed my mind, but they overlap. It really starts about him and it ends more about her. And she almost finds the peace that he was looking for. Okay, this was released February 4th, 2025.
Mm-hmm.
How long had this been in the making? I mean, including, please, even the initial germ of an idea.
I'll try to keep it from going into a TLDR, as they say. But I had the opportunity. I took early retirement so I could assist my mother as she was going through the final stages of dementia and Alzheimer's.
Mm.
And while she was still doing slightly better, she agreed with me that it was time for me to start doing some writing. And I had the opportunity to do a writing class at Sea called Riding the Waves, and my cousin, who's an Emmy Award-winning screenwriter and now a playwright, Cynthia Whitcomb, was leading it. And somehow being at sea, sort of away from all the visual reminders of everything that I had to do, I was able to tell my subconscious or unconscious or whatever the technical word would be, I'm giving you space to come out and play. What is it that you want? And this story came to me, and it seemed to come out of left field, but it was almost like a little movie. And I shared it that night with the group, and they all said, oh. But then they thought, well, Tracy, there are other things we think you should write, you know. but when I found I was doing my writing every day, I would sit down and the next chapter would be there. So I felt, you know what? I'm just going to write this out. This seems to have been something that was cooking in the back of my brain, and I will let it out onto the page and see what happens. And that is how it came about. So it was written first draft in 2017. And my cousin, who I just mentioned, Cynthia, she's my first reader. I always send things to her and get her feedback. Then I shared it with my writing group, did some pitching, and it was a long process until 2024, when I was getting good feedback pitching to agents. But one of them said, you know, it's just too quietly literary for me to be able to sell this basically to the big five publishers. So you should think about independent presses or university presses. And I came across this new traditional independent press, Type 18 Books, and I investigated them, and they'd started in 2023 and looked like they were building up legit collection of novels and novellas. So I reached out in a cold query, and I asked, do you accept queries from unagented writers? I have been told by agents that my work is too quietly literary. And the owner of the press, Mary Venzel White, replied, quietly literary sounds right up my street. So why don't you send me your query letter in your first 25 pages? So I did, and she said, okay, let me see your whole manuscript. She said, let's move forward.
Wow.
So it's been a really wonderful partnership.
Oh my gosh, yes. I know that at some point, what you read to the other people involved at the Riding the Waves, I couldn't help but think of the Navy when you were talking about these peaceful moments at sea and all this. It really got me to a yeah, the Navy didn't give that to me. Okay, so, no, but it was a short story at one point, so I'm imagining a couple of things, either really examining your story and thinking it really needs to be fleshed out, or it could also have been just typing away and, oh my, it's a bit longer now, isn't it?
Well, the way it was originally structured was what is one of my penultimate chapters, was my first chapter. And then it sort of, I'm going to mangle the pronunciation of this word, Ouroboros, which is kind of the snake eating its tail.
Okay, gotcha.
And so it went back to the beginning of his arrival. And so through the editorial process, that first chapter went away, and it's there close to the end. But that's where I started. And kind of what was unspooling in the back of my head was, okay, but now we have to talk about where it began.
It begins with his arrival. He's looking around the countryside before even making his way.
Right.
He goes through the forest, or maybe that's forest in quotes, I don't remember, but then he makes his way into the small town. So is this the part that wasn't there at one point and was now, okay, let's explore the origin?
Right. What is now the first chapter was originally the second.
Okay. And what did it start with at that point then?
It started out with, that day, the artist waited until the sun was fully up to set out with his easel, canvas, and paints, so he got a later start than he liked.
Okay. Oh, wow. That really puts you into the beginning of a character, wondering who that person is and what he's about to do.
Right.
I could see that as a really nice, enticing kind of beginning, too, but I also really love how it starts, because the fact is that it's his arrival. Makes wonderful sense as his arrival into the book.
Right.
And introducing himself and eventually to Madame Sorel herself. I'm David Fleming in conversation with Tracy Wise, author of Madame Sorel's Lodger, a fictionalized look at a period in the life of someone much like Vincent van Gogh. More at twisewriter.com, and more as KVC Arts continues. Many past KVC Arts can be found through iTunes, NPR One, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, and most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Now, Tracy, you've stated that the main character, the artist, is not Vincent van Gogh, and yet it is. I mean, saying strong parallels doesn't cut it. Were you at some point imagining simply an artist, and he became more and more a Van Gogh figure? Or were you from the get-go saying, I'm going to make this about Van Gogh, but not paint it, to coin a phrase, so specifically about him?
It did really start with Van Gogh. I realized that one of the things that had been cooking in the back of my mind was him. What I feel I did is that I took facts that I'd heard about him and I reverse engineered them to create a kind of character that might have done those things.
Okay.
But when you're writing something that's more biographical, you do research. I didn't do any specific research. I didn't go off and read any biographies to prepare for it. A lot of these paintings, we just know. I mean, years before I had gone to visit the Van Gogh or the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam, I came across four paintings of his. He went through what they used to call an Orientalist phase. I had never seen these paintings, and I fell in love with them, so I bought the small postcards, and I found these gorgeous little gold-painted wooden frames, and I've had those wherever I've lived hanging for the last 30 years, and I don't really describe any of those in the novel. But when I'm talking about his room, for example, the first draft I did of that, the class said, you know, we recognize this. Would you try to make sure it's a little bit more like the painting? So that one I tweaked a bit, but the others are just remembering bits and pieces. And again, since his art is so omnipresent, that you can describe things, and I think people caught on fairly quickly that we're talking about Van Gogh, and so they start their own internal paintings about paintings that don't even necessarily exist. So, yeah, I mean, after I had written it, I went back and I looked at some collections of his paintings, and I went, oh, you know what? That could be Madame Sorel. I don't remember seeing that painting before. But maybe that's her. Or, you know, maybe that is someone else from the Village of A. Or he did stay in a yellow house, but I believe the painting of the yellow house had green shutters.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So,
not the blue shutters.
Yeah.
The very beginning and very end of this book.
So the House of the Blue Shutters, again, I didn't want to tie it to a particular place.
Okay.
In the last couple years of his life, he lived in a number of different places. And again, so instead of trying to say, well, I'm going to describe this particular place so people can go and they can walk the streets with their book and check things off, I said, no, I'm not going to do that. This is my Village of A. I've created it. So you get to come visit the village when you read it. And it is a special place.
I understand certainly wanting to make up a village for all the reasons that you just mentioned. I mean, beyond anything else, you don't have to do the research.
Right, exactly.
You don't have that thorn in your side of saying, well, no, this, okay. But you could have also made up a name. But instead, every single time it's said or stated or referenced, it's a dash. So I guess I'm wondering about that, the decision to do that, just give this initial instead of, oh, I don't know, any kind of quaint little one-horse town at the edge of a forest kind of place.
Well, I have been a very heavy reader from the time I was small, and I have read a lot of Victorian novels, and that is something that was used occasionally in a Victorian novel.
Okay.
So I just thought, hey, you know, they used that in the 1900s. I'm just going to take it and stick it in. I posted about the novel on Blue Sky. I'm kind of addicted to social media, too. And someone saw it, and they said, wait, this is like H. Rider Haggard. And I was like, no, this is not like H. Rider Haggard. She was one of his novels, and King Solomon's Mines was another one of his novels, which were kind of lurid adventure, late 19th
Indiana
century.
Jones kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So I was amused at that, but I thought, yeah, okay, H. Rider Haggard did it, but I'm not pulling from H. Rider Haggard, please.
Gotcha. I wonder if it turns out Heathcliff was really just H. Dash.
Oh, maybe he was.
That's a really cool aspect of it, just actually pulling from, and only certain people would get it. That's a really cool thing. People who are immersed in that kind of thing, they're the ones that'll get it, but they will appreciate it doubly so. It's really cool. I'm glad I asked about that. Let's talk about a bit more of a specific point in the book, and we have to imagine, again, Van Gogh's style, at least what we generally see, what we would generally associate with Van Gogh, and whether it's trees in a field or whether it's the ever-present Starry Night, you would have to also think that, okay, some people would like that and some people don't. So as the artist goes through the town, and whenever he's meeting people, there's the mayor at one point, Madame Sorel herself. He also goes out to this house. I remember he shows several paintings. He made a point of selecting four or five paintings, I think, each time he would go out, or he would regret it when he didn't. But when he showed it to the mayor, okay, the mayor didn't want any of those, but he did want a portrait of his son and a second one of himself.
Right.
But then now, very specifically, a couple of people who didn't get it, Madame Sorel herself. He was hoping for money or an extended stay or who knows what. So he showed her several paintings, including a painting of his room. And I remember her just saying, this isn't art. Please take your paintings and leave. I think is how you phrased it. And then later on, he's off to a house. He encounters a boy and he shows him a painting of a field near a house. And there's some trees there. And the boy states that these trees are very plain. You have them dancing too much. Now, by the way, the quote, trees which were dancing too much, is this by chance inspired directly from Van Gogh's wheat field with cypresses? I was just looking for examples of his work, and I was like, no, oh my God, no, there's some trees, and they're, well, they're dancing more than they probably ought to be.
I was not really thinking of one of his specific paintings. Okay. I was just thinking about his paintings, because they're filled with so much life and so much movement, that if he was going to paint a tree, whatever tree he painted would be informed by that. But of course, the son of Monsieur le Maire is, you know, going
to say,
do not quote me on my French accent.
Je ne parle pas français.
You know, it's like, monsieur, I have been taught, you know, animal, vegetable, or mineral. Trees do not dance. So I thought that was a lovely little exchange between him and the young man. It's like, well, one day I will show you that trees do dance.
Wow. Again, the kid, he didn't quite say we'll agree to disagree, but very similar to that phrase. We will agree to differ, maybe, or something to that effect. And so he was much more accepting as opposed to Madame Sorel herself. Please take your paintings at least. Which reminds me, okay, now maybe a better side to her. I feel like we saw a change of Madame Sorel through the book. In the beginning, a lot of her words are not so much, hello, may I help you? It's good to see you, but it's, she might point her chin in that direction, but the words are,
I have a wonderful book group, and they actually consented to read an early draft and give me some feedback, which was so generous of them to do that. And when we met to discuss the book, there was this group of women sitting around a table all looking at one another and saying, un peu, un peu, un peu. They all turned into Madame Sorel. It was so funny.
Did you enjoy the chapter?
Exactly. As one reader said, Madame Sorel was so mean. But, you know, the thing is, I was interested in not doing types, but people. So no one has just one side. there are so many different parts. And so as it goes on, I mean, there are scenes that mm-hmm. the artist is not in.
Yeah.
But the other characters are. So you get to see more about them because it's just really about people affecting each other in this very small space.
I wonder if that's what I was wondering, if that was growth in her character, or maybe it was just instead other sides to her character. You know, when she's spending time with Gretchen, the foundling, with her, which sometimes that comes off as stern, but there's also teaching and learning. There's the fact that she cares for her brother mm-hmm. and how he is and how he will be. So there's that side of her as well. And there's her peaceful resolution later. There are a lot of sides to her. And I suppose that's what I was wondering. It's not so much growth of the character. It's just we're seeing all these different facets to her.
Well, I think it's both.
Okay.
I think you're seeing other sides to this person, that she's not just one thing. But she is affected by the artist. He changes her. He changes the way she sees.
Okay, so there is a change then. Okay.
So it's not one or the other, it's both.
Despite us really laughing about her not appreciating his work, politely stated, later on, though, when he does a portrait of mm-hmm. Luke, she mm-hmm. saw life in that painting of her brother, life that had been, maybe left over from when he was a little boy and maybe more innocent at that point. She suddenly saw the energies that mm-hmm. were in there where she didn't before. And that reminds me, by the way, I have no question about this, but it's something that I noted somewhere. The fact that when the artist is talking about putting his ideas or feelings or energies onto the canvas, he used the word transmission for that. I appreciate that. It's a very fluid kind of thing. It mm-hmm. really works really nicely. I appreciate that kind of thing. You could have said painted.
Oh.
I like transmissions.
Oh, well, because, and he realizes this, he's very much the mechanism by which all of that energy can get onto the canvas.
He's actually aware.
Right. He's okay. The paintbrush.
Okay.
You have to have someone holding that paintbrush.
In addition to the hard copy of the book, there's also an audiobook version of this as well. You voiced it. I'm really happy about that because I've heard you speak and I've talked to you and I've heard you read portions of the book there. Other people, maybe they write great poems, but you don't want to hear them read. Yeah. I liked yours. These are your characters. You are the one who can bring them to life the best.
Well, yeah, there's a certain amount of ego in that, sure, you know. But again, I'm a trained actress. I have been reading stories out loud since I was very young. When I was in high school, I read the bulk of The Lord of the Rings out loud to my brother.
Mm.
And I would try to do different voices for the different characters. And I have to tell you that Treebeard was really taxing because his voice was so low.
Poor little person.
That's right, yes. Uh-huh. My brother was pretty good, except he said, just don't try to sing the song. Whatever you do, don't. Oh, Tracy, don't. Anyway, I knew I could read the book, and I'm an unknown, and I don't have a ton of money to go hire professional actors and things. So I decided I would read it myself, and I was used as a guinea pig by Cal State San Bernardino. They had never recorded any audiobooks in their sound booth in the music department. So they used me as a guinea pig, and I hired a couple of students who acted as my engineers and put it all together for me and got it in the right form so that it would be accepted by Audible and Spotify and all those find-a-way voices and things. And one of the guys said, hey, you know what? I got hired in a job because I said I've worked on an audiobook. And they were like, cool.
Sweet.
So I feel like I gave something back to Cal State San Bernardino, which is very close to my heart. I worked there for several years. That's how
nice.
The audiobook came about.
Phenomenal. The artwork on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of a man, I think, holding an umbrella where the skin of the umbrella is gone, and you just have the skeletal part of it,
right.
You know, bent the wrong way.
Uh-huh.
I know that sometimes on books, it's the publisher. They've got this one. Other times, hey, you have this. Hey, this is what I wanted to represent. There's a little bit of give and take. Other times, you bring in the picture and say, this is it. Where was this? How was this one?
I had two choices.
Okay.
And this was the choice I felt best represented.
Were they provided by the publisher?
Yes, the publisher.
They read the book then, and mm-hmm. they went through their archives or commissioned people or whatever the case
Correct.
Was, and then they came to you and said, what do you think is...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was the other one?
It was darker in color and mood, and I felt while that spoke to a certain element in the story, mm-hmm. the ultimate story is really about joy and creativity and community and friendship. And I felt that that cover did not represent that.
Yeah.
And this man in the suit who is doing this, I'm going to use the word quixotic again, flying through the air with an inside-out umbrella skeleton, trying to do something that seems impossible, but somehow still doing it. I think that's closer to what the novel's about.
That's such a great way to leave this. I do have to ask you about one more review from Goodreads.
Okay.
The person that said, the audacity to end it like that. The audacity. And I think that was their full review.
Yes. I love that. That is my favorite review of all time. I think that is marvelous. It shows a reader that got so engaged with the book, whether or not they wanted to be that engaged with the book. That's a whole other thing. I have no way of knowing, but that it meant something to them and affected them. And wow, that's a huge compliment as a writer.
Tracy Wise, thank you so much for your time on this. There are times where I was looking for something and I found myself going back over things that I'd read earlier because there were moments or people or things. And I'm not even talking about full scenes. It's just the difference between rounding a corner or, and he stepped into a darkened passage. You know, there's that kind of thing that really just keeps on getting a person with this book, Madame Sorrell's Lodger. Thank you again for your time, Tracy.
Oh, well, you are most welcome. Thank you for talking to me about this book. It's very close to my heart.
That was Tracy Wise, author of Madame Sorrell's Lodger, a fictionalized look at a period in the life of someone much like Vincent van Gogh, and a wonderful read. Madame Sorrell's Lodger can be found through many online retailers, but a great starting point is Tracy's website, twisewriter.com. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Tracy Wise. And here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Sandy Hodela, Zach Mays, Champ Chipman, and Shireen Awad. Many past KVC Arts can be found through iTunes, NPR One, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts composed and performed by Sean Longstreet. So thanks to Sean as well. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support. Give any time of the year at kvcrnews.org/support. And thanks again.